Already in July of 1574, Philip was warned by his advisers that the royal coffers were empty, and they warned him, in fact, that the only way to avoid bankruptcy was to just repudiate his debts and abandon the war in the Netherlands. On the 18th of July, 1574, Philip is recorded to have made a prophetic remark. "I think that the Netherlands will be lost for a lack of money." He was right. On the 1st of September, 1575, Philip declared formal bankruptcy. Once he declared bankruptcy, he couldn't borrow any more funds. And if he couldn't borrow funds, he couldn't pay for his army. And if he couldn't pay for an army, he wouldn't have one. As soon as the news got out, the Dutch rebels lit bonfires in celebration, and there's a record which tells us that the Spanish governor of the Netherlands himself burst into tears, knowing what was happening. I'd like to take at least a brief pause at this point from the military conflict to return to some of the religious questions, especially the religious situation in the rebel north, this sort of enclave of holdouts against the Spanish crown. It's interesting to note that at least at first, an effort was made to preserve a kind of easygoing religious diversity, the kind of religious regime that the grandees themselves were advocating in the late 1560s. Indeed, in July of 1572, urged by the Prince of Orange, the Provincial Assembly of Holland, the States of Holland, declared that the free exercise of religion should be allowed as well to Papists, that is to say to Catholics, as Protestants, without any molestation or impediment. It was a fairly noble declaration. Naturally, it also had a political side to it as well. After all, if the rebellion in Holland and Zeeland was going to succeed, there had to be some kind of a broadly based religious policy which would appeal to really a maximum number of people. For the same reason, in order to broaden the appeal of their rebellion, the States of Holland at this time declared that they were fighting with the Prince of Orange in the king's name, interestingly enough, in Philip's own name, to recover the rights and liberties of the province which had been removed by Alva. In other words, it was that same strategy which we've seen before, that the rebels say that we're not rising up against the king, we're not resisting the king, we're fighting for the king, but against his evil advisor, the Duke of Alva, who is suppressing us. This, of course, conveniently overlooked the fact that Alva had been expressly sent by Philip to the Netherlands to overrun those same liberties, but that was not what could be said in public. Nevertheless, this broad-minded position wasn't really tenable in the long run. And religious policy in the rebel north saw a shift to state-supported Calvinism in the 1570s and the 1580s. The Calvinist exiles who had left the Netherlands during Alva's governorship, and there seemed to have been as many as 60,000 of them in all, were very organized. Indeed, they were organized enough to hold a so-called General Assembly in Germany, in the town of Wesel in northwestern Germany, in 1568. And they were also organized enough to hold a National Synod of the Dutch Reformed Church at Emden, another German town, in 1571. The Emden Synod laid out in considerable detail the organization, the theology, and of course the discipline to which all members of the Dutch Reformed Church were to subscribe. The Synod also established a complete ecclesiastical organization for the Calvinist churches in the Netherlands. There was, in other words, an institutional blueprint for the entire country. This tightly knit organizational structure allowed the Calvinists to exploit the unexpected successes of the sea beggars in 1572. I should point out here that it was really the organizational strength and social respectability of Calvinism which made it the only viable ideological alternative to Roman Catholicism in the Netherlands. Anabaptism, as we've seen before, was really socially suspect. It was seen as subversive and was associated with the lower orders in society. Lutheranism, by contrast, which did have members in the Netherlands, was never really organized enough. There weren't these synods and organizations like this to establish the structure in place. So then in the summer of 1572, it was the Calvinist exiles, above all, who began flooding back to the Netherlands. Their organization and their influence were soon reflected in a series of laws passed in the rebel north. In February of 1573, the States of Holland formally outlawed public Catholic worship. In March of 1573, Calvinists were given complete control of education in the province of Holland. And in October of 1573, there was a really decisive event. William of Orange himself, whose religious status had up to this point been surprisingly ambiguous. His wife had been a Lutheran, but he had never formally renounced Catholicism. In October of 1573, William could see where the wind was blowing from, and he announced his allegiance with the Calvinist Church. It was a really impressive accomplishment, but nonetheless, what is interesting about it is that it rested on a surprisingly small numerical base. We don't have any strong sense of exactly how many Calvinists there were in the Netherlands, But in 1587, an estimate was made that perhaps 10% of Netherlanders were Calvinists. Now, we don't know what this was based on, but it is interesting that the members of the Dutch Reformed Church themselves never contested the figure, which suggests that that was really about right.